Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. We want to invite you to join the conversation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And we're going to be talking Dallas Cowboys. And Gojo, the Cowboys got a huge division win on Sunday in Washington and, in effect, put the division in their rearview mirror. I know they've got three division games left out of the next four, but ultimately they got this thing wrapped up in a nice, tight, tidy little bow because it'll be hard for any of those teams that are trailing them to actually overtake them and win this division. But that doesn't mean that there aren't concerns for the Dallas Cowboys. And my former boss, Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, who's never shied away from a camera or ever shied away from an interview, had some interesting things to say on Dallas radio this week about his star quarterback, Dak Prescott.
I don't want to say that slump, but that's probably fair. But it's such a multifaceted evaluation. But I would say that our offense is definitely away from where we were playing five and six games ago from the standpoint of production.
And Chris, I mean, it's obvious to anyone who's watched that this outfit appears broken. But as you look at it, how much do we put squarely on Dak and how much, you know, lies elsewhere in this conversation?
Gojo, I got to say a lot of this is on Dak, man. I mean, it's clear and obvious. I mean, remember, if you go back to that game they had before the bye week against the New England Patriots when they won in that overtime thrill of that throw that Dak made to CeeDee Lamb, like some of the headlines that came out of that game were about Dak Prescott and that calf injury, and we were wondering how long it was going to take him to get past that. And Gojo, here we are 7 weeks later, and I still think that Dak is dealing with some lingering effects from that calf injury. And his overall decline in production has drastically impacted what the offense has been. I mean, you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys in the last seven games. They've won four of them, and they've only gone over 400 yards of total offense four times. In comparison, before the bye week in the first six games, the Dallas Cowboys were over 400 yards in five of those six games in total offense. So there's a clear difference in terms of what the production has been on the offense. And it correlates to getting a diminished version of Dak Prescott from a health standpoint. So I think that has to be the focus for the Cowboys the final month of the regular season. They've got to find a way to get Dak Prescott healthy. And I don't know if that involves sitting him for a game and potentially forfeiting an opportunity to compete for that number one seed in the NFC. But let's face it, if you don't have a healthy Dak Prescott, once you get to the playoffs, you're probably going to be talking about an early exit with this team, no matter how good the defense is playing, no matter how healthy your offensive line is, no matter how healthy your running backs are. The key to this thing is Dak Prescott, and right now he's not right, and the Dallas Cowboys need to look at any and all options they have in order to get him back on track.
I agree, and his health, like you said, is going to come down to are they willing to sit him or not. So that can be the decision because we know that's break glass in case of emergency. I'm sure they would like to avoid that, as would Dak. We saw how hard he fought in Hard Knocks to try and get back on the field. We know that's how dude is wired. I still look at part of this, though, Chris, and say, we've also got to put eyes on Kellen Moore in this, right? Because you go back to looking at that game this weekend where, yeah, they got out to an early lead here, which should skew in favor of however you want to call this game to get towards the finish line. But Washington able to get back into a lot of this, make this thing close. They used max protection in this game 6.7% of the time here. Compare that with the game before where it was over a quarter of their snaps where they kept seven or more guys in to protect Dak Prescott. It's things like that, Chris, that we saw an offense that when Dan Orlovsky tallied it up, only on 36 rushing attempts pulled players on the offensive line on four of those attempts. If you're not going to do things to protect your quarterback, if you're not going to have a rushing attack that does different things in it to make sure a defense can't key in on one of those, then you're going to make a difficult task for your injured quarterback even tougher than it needs to be.
Yeah, and you can't do the same things that you were doing in the first half of the season right now. Like every offense has staples, they're going to be bread and butter plays that you're always going to come back to, but there have got to be wrinkles off of that that make defenses think, that make defenses slow down a little bit and give you an opportunity, put your players in advantageous situations. And we're just not getting enough of that from Kellen Moore right now. Now, I get that some of the issues along the offensive line health-wise limit what your offense can be, and then a diminished version of Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard doesn't necessarily help things either. But at the same time, if you're one of the most bright and innovative young minds on the offensive side of the ball in the NFL today, then you've got to find a way to be effective, especially when your team has double-digit leads in the second half. You've got to find a way to be able to shorten the game, to salt that game away, and it starts by being able to find effective ways to run the football, not heaping more responsibility on Dak Prescott. That interception that he threw that went for a pick six at the end of the game, Dak Prescott should never have been in that situation where you're putting him out there on the perimeter. It seems like it's a run-pass option, but if you know you're dealing with the quarterback that's having lingering effects from a calf injury, why would you jeopardize his health in that situation? Why would you jeopardize the game in that situation? It just doesn't make any sense. Right there in that spot, punt is not a bad play. Kellen Moore has to understand that when it comes to play calling down the stretch for this team. Otherwise, he's going to cost them a valuable game.
Kenny Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr., Chris Candy. Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, talked about who else is at fault with the Cowboys' recent struggles.
They are going to start taking a look, but we're not there yet.
That's right.
We're not there yet. Let's slow it down, because I can point to a lot of quarterbacks in their fifth and sixth years that didn't get nowhere near percentage-wise winning or creating some of the amazing plays that Dak Prescott has made in his young career. So I want to slow down the hatred on Dak Prescott, not from you, but from people that, Dak Prescott, like, just slow it down a little bit, because we don't have the same lust or anger or a vitriol against some of these other quarterbacks that we push up so high, and then all of a sudden we keep them there when they're not even doing remotely close to what he's doing.
I don't know if I would say anyone's necessarily heaping hate on Dak Prescott here, Chris. It's just the reality. We are used to the standard by which he has played for the majority of his career, the one that earned him that rich contract that he got, and he hasn't been playing up to it recently, and I'm sure he'd be the first one to admit it.
Yeah, no question about it. Not to mention, we all know that he's not 100% healthy. Like, there's got to be something that's going on with Dak beyond not just playing well, and he's never going to come out and say that he's not healthy, because that's just not how he's built. He's one of those players that fancies himself as a leader. He's always going to be accountable for his performance. If he's out there, he's healthy enough to be playing, and the standard is the standard. That doesn't change. That doesn't get tweaked. He's not Baker Mayfield. This guy's just built a little bit differently. So I think it's fair to be critical of him while also taking a step back and realizing, okay, there's something else going on there. But I don't think you'll find anybody that will argue at his best Dak Prescott is a top 5-6 quarterback in the National Football League. Like, it's not like the Dallas Cowboys made some mistake by paying him out that contract this past offseason that's giving him $40 million on average annual value. Like, he's worth that. And his team is in position to win the division and get back into the playoffs. So the thing that concerns you is, can Dak get healthy enough so that when they need him the most, he can be at his best? This season is about championships for the Dallas Cowboys. And so you've got to make sure that Dak is trending in that direction in terms of performance once you get to the tournament. Because the last thing you want to do is have Dak continue to be in this funk for whatever reason when you could be in a one-and-done situation.
Yep, that has got to be the priority for this team. We know Dak has been dealing with injuries going back to training camp, coming off a year last year where he missed time because of that ankle injury, and he has battled through all this silently along the way, because like you said, that is a proud dude who is not going to make that the excuse, not going to make that the reason. Coming up next, though, we will talk about an injured quarterback who seems to be making a lot of noise behind closed doors. How much more does Baker Mayfield need to see from the Cleveland Browns to be happy? We'll tell you next here, Candy and Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Candy and Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we got some news yesterday afternoon from Kevin Stefanski and from Baker Mayfield that we just did not expect. And Baker on Sunday deciding that he wanted to take issue with some of the things that were happening internally in terms of how folks were feeling about him, and then some of the grievances that he had in the wake of the locker room being somewhat divided because of the Odell Beckham Jr. decision that the organization made weeks prior. And now Kevin Stefanski's coming out and saying He doesn't quite know what Baker Mayfield is talking about. So it seems like this is a situation where everybody in Cleveland ain't on the same page, and it's not necessarily all good in terms of how the quarterback feels about his franchise.
No, Mary Kay Cabot, who does a great job covering the Cleveland Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, did the article listing some of the things that might be at the root of this. She said that there's reports that there's been a disconnect all season between Baker Mayfield and Kevin Stefanski in terms of play calling after Baker criticized the Browns offense for being too conservative this weekend after building a big lead. Second, there was talk that Baker Mayfield responded poorly to criticism from the team's in-house radio show. And then there's this, Chris, because we talk so much about Odell Beckham Jr. and Baker Mayfield, the Browns ultimately deciding to move on from OBJ, who's out in Los Angeles now, that apparently players coming out in support of Odell Beckham Jr. after his father posted that video was hard on Mayfield and reportedly took its toll there. So this seems to be a guy who all of a sudden saw the way everyone responded to that situation and doesn't seem to be able to get that bad taste out of his mouth.
What I don't get, Gojo, is why is he being so sensitive, especially after the organization has made the decision publicly to support him? Like, there was clearly a rift between him and Odell Beckham Jr., so much so that OBJ Sr., decided he was, I mean, not OBJ, but Odell Beckham Sr. decided he was going to go out on social media and put that video out there of his son getting wide open and Baker Mayfield missing him with passes. So the organization decided, you know what? We're going to move on from a player that we invested a first-round pick in, a third-round pick in, and Jabril Peppers in order to acquire. We're going to move on from that guy because he could potentially undermine our quarterback's position with the rest of the guys in the locker room and his standing with the organization. We don't want that. We want to publicly and privately support Baker Mayfield as much as we possibly can. So I don't understand why Baker would take issue with what the Cleveland Browns have done here or why he would even be feeling a way at all knowing that he's got the full support of the organization based on the decision that they made the month prior. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. It's a quarterback that's clearly in a situation now where you have to question his leadership, especially after some of the things have come out, some of the things that he said, how he's handled himself in post-game press conferences, and then also what his wife has done questioning the toughness of the team in order to support the toughness of her husband. It just doesn't make any sense. Baker Mayfield is doing it all wrong right now, and it could be the undoing of the Cleveland Browns playoff hopes.
Well, it could be the undoing of a lot more than that for Baker, too, because this is a guy who's trying to convince this organization that he's worth a long contract extension for a lot of money, and he's been hurt all season, and certainly the play suffered. But, Chris, we remember going back to the OBJ saga, right? He was very out front saying, yeah, that had an effect on him. Yeah, seeing those things, he felt some type of way about it. That's always been who Baker is. Like, you go back to college, and he has never been a guy that shied away with how he's felt. And, Chris, I've never been a franchise's player, right, where sometimes the quarterback and management have a little bit of a different relationship because you're kind of CEO, face of the franchise guy. It's different than the vast majority of players and the relationship they got with the front office. But the one that sticks out, and the reason I'm sure Baker, even with that in tow, feels some type of way is because, man, there's nothing weirder than finding out that your teammates might not rock with you the way that you thought. Like, when push came to shove in that spot and he saw so many people coming out in support of Odell Beckham Jr. for a guy that probably thinks he's the leader around there, that kind of hits different than even management having your back, because certainly the organization backing you is one thing, but Chris, the only way that really shows up is dollars and cents. That's like any of us. If you're the organization and you want to show me how you really love me, you back up the Brinks truck and you show me that way.
No, I feel you on that. I mean, how you pay me shows me how much you respect what I bring to the table. But also, this is a franchise that put a lot of resources in being able to acquire Odell Beckham. Now, I get it. It wasn't this regime. But you're still talking about a lot of cap dollars. You're still talking about draft picks that could have been helping this team right now. And you're still talking about a player in Jabril Peppers that they took with a first-round pick. They shipped all of that away in order to bring over OBJ. And then they cut bait with him, essentially because he didn't necessarily get along with Baker Mayfield. Like, we see that Odell is not a player that's past it, that he's capable of still being able to produce at a high level, and yet this is a franchise that made a decision to get rid of him because they recognize what that could do to Baker long term. The part that I don't understand, though, is how does Baker behaving this way endear him to his teammates? How does that work? Because if you did have a locker room that was divided in terms of people that were in OBJ's camp and people that were in Baker's camp, how does his behavior since OBJ's departure engender any kind of confidence, endear him in any way to the teammates that weren't necessarily on board with the franchise making that decision? That's the part that doesn't make sense for me. Baker can't afford to be selfish. He's the quarterback of the damn team. That's a leadership spot. Like, whether you like some of the things that your teammates have had to say about you or not, you know how you get everybody on your side? You shut up, you go out there and you produce, you take them to where everybody wants to go, which is the playoffs. If you do that, a lot of the questions, a lot of the grumblings, a lot of the, you know, the locker room conversations in quiet corners, all of those things go away when you go out there and produce. But we haven't heard that from Baker Mayfield. He hadn't taken on that approach. Instead, he's chosen to inundate us with injury updates, trying to make excuses as to why he's not producing at the level that everybody in the franchise expects him to, why he's not playing as good as he did in the second half of last year and into the playoffs. That's all we're getting from him. All I'm getting from him is excuses as to why he feels away or why he can't produce. And none of that passes the test when it comes to making it clear and obvious to the franchise that you are their future franchise quarterback. It doesn't.
No, well, and that's why this all reeks of that kind of desperation to me, Chris, because if he was producing, we wouldn't hear much, right? In the good stretches with Baker Mayfield in this franchise, and there have been good stretches here. There are reasons that people in Cleveland were backing this guy with such passion last summer when people talked about trading him on the outside, is because there have been good stretches, and they've been when Baker kind of put the clamps on some of the rest of this stuff. Personality's great, but production comes first in all of this, and now you're starting to see what feels like desperate thrashing in a situation of a player that knows what's at stake, knows what's on the line, and I think if he's got eyes, can see that and feel that slipping away during the course of this season. This has not been a year on or off the field for Baker Mayfield that is going to stamp that newly minted contract that you want or get this team to where they thought it was going to go. That is the difficulty.
Gojo, does he want out? Like, does he want a contract from Cleveland? Because the behavior that he's exhibiting right now doesn't seem like he's a guy that's interested in sticking around there long term. It doesn't. Now, I can't explain why he's doing what he's doing, but it's counterproductive to being able to win over other players in that locker room. How he's going about his business is not something that's going to lead to him, you know, instilling a lot of faith and a lot of confidence in the rest of the guys that he can lead them consistently where they want to be.
I would say this, Chris. I don't think he wants out because I think by and large, this has been who Baker's been since he was at Oklahoma. Like, none of this is surprising going back to Baker in college. We dealt with a lot of these same things while he was a Sooner. And so seeing it now, thought we were past some of that over the course of last year. And maybe as the going gets tough, we're going to see that get tested a little more and more down the stretch for Baker Mayfield. That will probably not be in the top five of things we saw from week 14. Coming up next, though, Chris Canty will give you the five best things we saw from this weekend. We'll do that after this word from Indeed. Now, running your own business requires a lot of running around. From bookkeeping to client meetings, you run it all. By the time you need to hire, you've run out of energy. Luckily, with Indeed Instant Match, you immediately receive a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed are going to match your job description the minute you sponsor a job. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers four times more hires than all the other job sites combined. Hiring can finally run smoothly with Indeed. To learn more, visit Indeed.com/credit. Top five from the NFL weekend that was, next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We want to encourage you to get in where you fit in on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. Taking your calls on the Dallas Cowboys. And just exactly how concerned should Cowboys fans be about the health of Dak Prescott? Again, the calling line is 888-729-3776. Listen to the Man in the Arena podcast, a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts our everyday lives through the lens of Tom Brady's career. Available wherever you get your podcasts and brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Need to finance a home like a pro? Rocket can. Gojo, it's Tuesday on Canty and Golic Jr., so you know we got to do top five, bottom five. And although being in the penthouse doesn't necessarily feel natural to me, I'm going to go ahead and get this done for the crew. Let's get it going. Top five. NFL Week 14, Chris Canty style.
Which teams were great?
Breaks a tackle at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
What player was not?
Does he hang on? Intercepted! He couldn't hang on!
This is the NFL Top 5, Bottom 5.
I will say, Chris, of the two of us, you're probably the only one that could afford a penthouse, so this actually does fit.
I'll let you tell it, Gojo, but let's kick this thing off with number five.
Number five.
Pete Carroll. Gojo, I think it's fair to say, embattled Seattle Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, right?
Yes, that checks the box. Yeah,
it's fair to say that. I mean, he's on the verge of guaranteeing his first losing season in the Russell Wilson era of Seahawks football. But yet, I feel like we got to give Pete Carroll a little bit of love. On Sunday, he picked up his 150th career win in the NFL, beating the Houston Texans. So I just feel like we got to give him a shout-out because we've been spending so much time trying to fire Pete Carroll in an effort to keep Russell Wilson. But the win puts Pete Carroll 21st on the all-time list, moving him ahead of Hall of Fame coach Bill Cowher. He's got the fourth most wins among active coaches behind Bill Belichick, Andy Reid, and Mike Tomlin. So shout out to Pete Carroll for picking up his 150th win.
Yeah, and Pete Carroll, who's going to go down, I think, is one of the few coaches and one of the most successful in navigating that transition from being high-level college head coach with what he did at Southern Cal to what he's now done in the NFL, or as I call it, the anti-Urban Meyer.
Yeah, juicy fruit, beware Pete Carroll when he's around. Okay, we'll keep it moving.
Number four.
This doesn't feel natural at all.
Oh, man.
This doesn't feel natural to me at all because I'm about to give some love to an offensive lineman. But how could we not, right? It's Andrew Whitworth with the Los Angeles Rams, the left tackle. He becomes the first left tackle in NFL history to start a game at 40 years old. Unbelievable what Whitworth has been able to do. It's pretty cool that it happened on Monday Night Football in a win that the Rams got, a win that the Rams needed over the division rival Arizona Cardinals. I can remember when I first played against Andrew Whitworth in 2008 when he was a left guard for the Cincinnati Bengals. That was his third season, I believe, Gojo, and I was in my fourth season. I've been retired for 6 years, and I'm still in my 30s. This guy is still balling, and he's 40. Unbelievable. I feel like that's a natural spot to play that Mike Gundy, I'm a man, I'm 40 drop. But, I mean, that's Andrew Whitworth. He's a man, he's 40, and he's still balling at left tackle.
He is grown, man. Big Wit, something else. You guys can have Tom Brady, 44 years old, playing quarterback. I will take my 40-year-old left tackle playing one of the most violent positions in the sport and somehow still doing it at the highest level. Thank you.
There we go. Let's keep it moving. Number three.
Number three.
Now, listen, I don't like young players popping off. I really don't. And so I questioned whether or not I was going to keep this player at number three because he said some things that sounded really, really disrespectful to a lot of veterans in the NFL. When you say the NFL really ain't that hard and you're a rookie, that's not the direction that you want to take things in. But game recognized game, and Michael Parsons has got a whole lot of game, so much so that people want to thrust him into the Defensive Player of the Year convo. For all of you folks that are just doing that, welcome. We've been saying that on this show for the past month or so. But with Micah Parsons' performance against the Washington football team on Sunday, a game in which he had two sacks, a forced fumble that led to a touchdown by defensive lineman Dorrance Armstrong, Micah Parsons becomes one of three NFL rookies to have 12-plus sacks and 75-plus tackles. Gojo, the other two names on that list, Reggie White and Leslie O'Neal. Pretty damn good company for Micah Parsons.
Yeah, I grew up hearing a lot of stories about Reggie White, my dad's former teammate with the Philadelphia Eagles. He's basically a deity in our house, so if you're in that kind of air, you're doing all right, Rook.
All right, number two.
Number two.
The GOAT, Tom Brady. He passes Drew Brees for the all-time completions record on Sunday in their win against the Buffalo Bills. And then, oh, by the way, decides he wants to toss his 700th touchdown pass, which is the game winner to Breshad Perriman in overtime. I mean, I don't know what more we can say about Tom Brady. We're running out of accolades or superlatives to heap on top of him. But, I mean, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. And right now, he's got the grand slam when it comes to quarterback stats. He's got the wins. He's got the completions. He's got the touchdowns. and he's got the yards. So, I mean, Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time. Is there anything left to be said about Tom Brady, Gojo?
No, there's not. I just, for one, am happy to see him still, like, 44 years old, fighting it out in piles after QB sneaks. He clearly has not lost a step and wants to try and challenge the rushing records now. We see him taking off on scrambles so damn much.
Yeah, Tom Brady, dual threat quarterback, whoever thunk it. Number one.
Number one.
This has got to go to the Denver Broncos team.
Yeah.
It has to. Honoring Demaryius Thomas, his legacy, what he meant not only to that organization, but to that greater Denver community, the way that they came out and boat raced the Detroit Lions, really, really impressive. But to me, the way they started the game, only 10 men on the field to acknowledge the loss of Demaryius Thomas, I thought that was the right thing to do. And then I also thought it was a classy touch by Dan Campbell, Detroit Lions head coach, not to accept the penalty. But just overall, the way that that team played, the largest margin of victory for the Denver Broncos on the season. Their offense scored on 6 of their 9 possessions, and then their defense was able to get 2 takeaways, which led to touchdowns for the Broncos offense. So can't say enough about the performance. And all the players, when they made big plays in that game, they pointed up to the sky or they pointed to the number 88 decal that was on the field out there and in Power Field at Mile High Stadium. So shout out to them for honoring DT's memory, his legacy, the right way.
Yep, powerful to see that group rally around someone they lost inside that brotherhood, inside the NFL fraternity. Everyone involved understanding some things are just way more important than the game that is going to get played on that field. So a fitting way to cap off the top 5 things we saw from the NFL weekend that was. I'll hit you with the bottom 5 coming up in just a little bit. But coming up next, Steph Curry on the cusp of some serious greatness tonight as he steps into Madison Square Garden. Why, this might just be another reminder of where the Knicks aren't at this point in the calendar. Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we're going to have ESPN reporter Nick Friedell on a little bit later in the show to kind of tee this up for us. But we got to talk about Steph Curry going to Madison Square Garden tonight, right? Like the Golden State Warriors getting into town early this morning. They couldn't fly out from Indy last night, so they had to fly into New York City on Tuesday morning, go to the hotel, and now they're getting ready to suit up in the Garden. And this is going to be a historic night because Steph Curry is only 2 three-pointers shy of breaking Ray Allen's record for most career three-point makes. And so it feels like this is something that the Golden State Warriors have been teeing up for Steph for the past week and a half or so, but we're actually here on the eve of Steph Curry becoming the greatest three-point shooter of all time. So I'm excited about it. I feel like it's a little bit cruel to do this to Knicks fans, knowing that they were one pick away from being able to have the chance to draft Steph Curry in the 2009 NBA draft. But this is a situation where Steph is going to make history, and it's fitting that he's going to do it in the world's most famous arena.
Yeah, this is yet another instance of a premier player in the NBA coming to have a great moment of accomplishment in the theater that is Madison Square Garden, who doesn't play for the Knicks. Like, our producer Shannon has his head in his hands right now, noted Knicks fan, looking at the situation because he knows it all too well. Because this is all too familiar. Because this is something that every Knicks fan understands is a rite of passage, watching and coming in. And the worst part about it is, Chris, they're going to cheer for him, too. Like, they're going to love it. Because this place appreciates a good show. Because this place appreciates good showmen. And because they know damn well they are not in the same weight class as Golden State. So it's not like getting beat by Trae Young, who you thought you had a real shot at beating.
Yeah, as long as Steph Curry doesn't pull a LeBron James and start flipping water bottles on the bench in a blowout, I think Knicks fans would be on board with him coming into their building and breaking the record. But you said this a little bit earlier in between our segments, but you said he's probably going to try to do this in the most ignorant fashion possible, which is Steph Curry pulling up across right across half court, trying to make it one of those impossible shots that Steph Curry is known to make and only him can make in the NBA. Like, it's going to be a situation like that where Steph Curry wants the drama to build a little bit, and he wants it to be one of those highlight type moments, something above and beyond what other players around the NBA are capable of doing. So I'm excited to see it. I'll be locked in. I want to witness that kind of history just because of what Steph Curry has meant to the game of basketball and how he's revolutionized the modern game in terms of what we consider a good shot. So it's going to be an incredible night tonight. I know the energy is going to be electric in the Garden. But I can't wait to watch Steph Curry end up hitting that shot and being crowned as the greatest three-point shooter of all time.
Yep, 2,972 made threes currently. He is one behind Ray Allen, who is going to be in attendance. He's going to be in the celebrity row there in the on courtside in Madison Square Garden. Reggie Miller is going to be on the call, which I'm sure is going to make Knicks fans even happier in this entire instance. So there's a lot of insult to injury there. But I do agree with you, Chris. I hope Steph tries to do. And, like, this is Steph. You mentioned the throwing the water bottle on the court. Lest we not forget, like, we got through all the babyface stuff early with Steph, and we realized this dude wants to rub your nose in it, right? The mouthpiece biting Steph Curry that we saw in the 73-win season. Like, that is who that dude is at his core. So he's going to be gunning it, folks, out here tonight, and I can't wait. We'll talk to Nick Friedell, our ESPN NBA reporter, who's at MSG right now getting ready for this historic moment. He's going to join us at 6:30 Eastern here on Canty and Golic Jr. But, Chris, this is going to be a moment of celebration. But it's in the midst of a fair amount of turmoil right now for the NBA, who, unlike the NFL, who's trying to finish off a season while some of these COVID issues start coming back to light, the NBA is just getting started here. Like, we haven't even hit Christmas Day, and we've already got the Los Angeles Lakers canceling practice after a positive COVID test. The Nets now with five players ruled out, some of whom are in the COVID protocols here, and NBA executives and health officials expecting that uptick in cases to keep going on here, Chris. And I wonder how different the response is going to be. You and I mentioned for NFL teams, if you're in the midst of a playoff hunt, we're in, you know, just finishing up week 14. If you got to lock it down and ride this thing out down the stretch of the season, being as safe as possible, knowing what's on the line, you go ahead and do it. The NBA's got to figure out a way to do this much more sustainably because they've got their entire season in front of them.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You don't want an outbreak to jeopardize the integrity of the season. You don't want it to interrupt the season, especially with the losses that the owners have had to incur, because in the last year they weren't able to have fans in all of the buildings around the league. So it's definitely got to be a concern for the players, but also for ownership in terms of being able to make sure that you can get all of these games in and try to make up with some of the revenue that you lost over the course of the past couple of years. Like, this is going to be interesting to see how the NBA handles it, what kind of protocols they implement, the conversations that the league is going to have with the MBPA, Michelle Roberts and company, because they've got to try to wrap their minds around this, wrap their heads around this, because they don't want to have to deal with another shutdown. And I just feel like with all the travel that the NBA has got, with the emergence of the Omicron variant and that being more transmissible, and knowing that we're going into the winter months where you're always going to see an uptick in terms of spread, like, this is going to be a challenge for the NBA to be able to get through this part of the schedule. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage it. But, I mean, you got to think that there are some takeaways that they had from the previous couple of years in dealing with pandemic impacted seasons that they'll be able to apply here in order to give themselves the best chance to get through the season.
Yeah, I think this is relevant from a Western Conference head athletic trainer who was cited in this article on ESPN.com. It said, quote, "It doesn't feel like eradication is on the table. I think at some level we're going to have to live with it," meaning doing what you can do to be as safe as possible in this process, giving yourself the best chance with the practices you use as a team to get through all this, aka, once again, because we've got to operate out of safety for the people involved in all this, not just the ones on the court, the younger, comparatively healthy people, but everyone around these organizations, this is going to be a part of how folks do business. And the teams that are the most diligent with how they go about their protocol, the teams that have the highest percentage of vaccinated players, are probably going to have the best chance of being able to finish this thing the way they all want to, which is getting to the dance, having a chance for the Larry O'Brien, and getting to do what their goals are at the start of this season. So that's what's at stake heading into Madison Square Garden for Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors tonight. Coming up next, though, we will set the table for a home stretch battle for the one seed, the likes of which we haven't seen in a while in the NFL. Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.